Press TV headlines. Another oil rig overturns in the U.S. state of Louisiana as the Gulf of Mexico oil slick remains out of control. Jordan warns tensions over Israeli settlement expansion could push the region to the brink of an explosion. And Iran says the West has proven to be dishonest in its dealings over Iran's nuclear energy program.
It is 6 p.m. in Washington, D.C. and 2:30 a.m. here in the Iranian capital, Tehran. This is Press TV's World News.
Many thanks for joining us this hour. Well, the U.S. coastal areas are facing rising threats as a second oil drilling rig accident has occurred in Louisiana in 10 days.
Indeed, this after the oil slick from the first accident in the Gulf of Mexico has reportedly washed ashore. The second rig incident happened near Morgan City in Louisiana. Meanwhile, Coast Guard officials are investigating the reports as fishermen in coastal towns fear for their livelihood. Florida and Louisiana governors have already declared a state of emergency. The spreading oil slick has forced the U.S. administration to rethink plans to increase offshore drilling. The White House has banned oil drilling in new areas of the U.S. coast to step up its response to the worsening situation.
Before I make a statement on the economy, I just want to offer...
We're here to make sure that the resources are being used wisely and to the greatest effect in minimizing environmental risk. Let me be clear. The president has ordered that the administration use every single available resource at our disposal in response to this issue. As the oil nears the shore, it's important to note that we have anticipated and planned for a worst-case scenario since day one.
Well, the Homeland Security Secretary has also said British Petroleum is going to be pushed to further engage in the strongest response effort possible to clean up the spill. This comes as authorities are investigating the exact cause of the oil spill off the coast of Louisiana last week. Some 5,000 barrels of oil a day are estimated to be spilling into the water.
Jordan's King Abdullah has warned that Israel's settlement building can lead to explode the situation in the Middle East. The monarch says all parties engaged will pay the price if the settlement building in East Jerusalem Al-Quds continues. Abdullah has also accused Israel of, quote, playing with fire by carrying out unilateral actions in East Al-Quds. King Abdullah says Israel should choose between living in an isolated fortress in the region or reaching peace with all Arab and Islamic states. Abdullah has made the remarks ahead of a meeting of the Arab League to be held in Cairo this weekend.
Well, settlers in an Israeli settlement in the occupied West Bank say all settlers have a duty to fight any settlement building restriction. Far-right settlers say the battle against building restrictions in the occupied Palestinian territories is of great significance. Leaders of the West Bank settlement of Yitzhar have called for violent retaliation for any such restriction. They have launched numerous attacks on Palestinians, including an arson attack on a mosque in December of 2009.
Many of the settlements, like this one near Bethlehem.
U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton says the United States wants the Palestinians and the Israelis to begin what she calls indirect peace talks. Clinton says U.S. Special Envoy George Mitchell will return to the Middle East next week to get the process underway. She also says she expects an Arab foreign ministers meeting to endorse the new talks. Acting Palestinian Authority Chief Mahmoud Abbas pulled out of negotiations after Israel announced new Jewish settlement construction in March. Israeli officials announced plans to build 1,600 new homes for Jewish settlers, ignoring U.S. and Palestinian objections. Well, meanwhile, U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton says Syria will face consequences if it fails to listen to the United States.
President Assad is making decisions that could mean war or peace for the region. We know he's hearing from Iran, Hezbollah, and Hamas. It is crucial that he also hear directly from us, so that the potential consequences of his actions are clear. That's why we are sending an ambassador back to Syria. There should be no mistake, either in Damascus or anywhere else, The United States is not re-engaging with Syria as a reward or a concession.
Well, Clinton made the comments before the American Jewish Committee in Washington. Her remarks echoed Israel's claims that Syria supplied Lebanon's Hezbollah movement with tactical missiles. This while U.S. intelligence sources reject the claims and say there are no signs such transfers have taken place. Both Syrian and Lebanese officials have strongly rejected the Israeli claims. Lebanon's Foreign Minister Ali al-Shamsi has said that Israel is using the Scud allegations as a pretext to launch another war against his country. Well, Scottish pro-Palestinian activists have mounted an exhibition directly outside the Scottish Parliament to counter what they're describing as an Israeli propaganda exercise inside the building.
Well, the Parliament has been hosting a presentation which claims to highlight Israel's contribution to science, medicine, and technology. But the protesters argue it whitewashes out Israel's war crimes.
The exhibition was sponsored by an individual member of Parliament and created by a group calling itself the Scottish Friends of Israel. They have dismissed claims from critics that it's a PR exercise on behalf of Israel and insist it is non-political in nature. But protests and controversy surrounding its hosting have led to public access being restricted and only permitted through prior arrangement.
Inside the Parliament, out of sight and behind closed doors, is the Israeli exhibition, while over here in front of the building, in plain view of passing traffic and tourists, is the counter-exhibition mounted by Scottish activists.
The activists argue that the Israeli exhibition, which showcases Israeli technology, fails to fully acknowledge how Israel makes use of the latest military science and technology in reality. They've set up an exhibition reminding the Scottish people of Israel's role in the bombing of Gaza in January of 2009, which claimed 1,400 Palestinian lives, most of them civilians.
Clearly, we felt we had to present the other side of the story, not just the Israeli technology, but the impact of that Israeli technology.
Along with the activists is a young Palestinian who is studying for a doctorate at a local university. He witnessed the bombing of Gaza firsthand and remembers it vividly. He says the suffering is continuing with the current Israeli siege.
This exhibition is to remind people that there are people there, as I was there, suffering until this moment, and they need the help of everybody in the whole world.
Overall, the activists say feedback from the public has been positive, with only a couple of negative responses.
That's essentially it. Two people in 2 days who have vocally opposed what we're doing, but almost everyone that's been here has supported us and have congratulated us for actually holding this exhibition and trying to counter the Israeli propaganda exercise.
The Scottish Friends of Israel group insists their exhibition inside Parliament is purely to draw attention to the medical and scientific achievements of Israelis. Scottish parliamentary rules allow individual members of Parliament to sponsor small-scale exhibitions inside the building, such as the Israeli exhibition. But following the controversy, a parliamentary committee is now reviewing those rules. Hassan Ghani, Press TV, Edinburgh, Scotland.
In other news, Iran says it cannot trust a Western offer asking Tehran to exchange its nuclear fuel outside the country. An advisor to the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution says the West has a record of breaking promises it has made to Iran. Ali Akbar Velayati said it would be naive to believe they might keep its promise and go on with the deal to exchange fuel outside Iranian territory. He stated that Iran is ready to exchange its 5 to 5.3% enriched uranium for 20% enriched uranium, but the swap must take place inside the country. Velayati added that the West's insistence on the matter is highly suspicious, as there is no point in taking the issue beyond Iranian borders. Well, for more on that story, we're joined by Jeff Steinberg, who's with the Executive Intelligence Review, is joining us on the line from Washington. Mr. Steinberg, as always, it was a pleasure to have you here on Press TV. And why does the West continue to insist on a fuel swap outside Iran when, as Iran has pointed out and history shows, they don't actually have a good record of holding up their own end of the bargain when dealing with Iran's nuclear energy program?
Well, my own view is that really, there's no good reason to delay any further reaching a final agreement. And I don't think that quibbling over details such as the location where the transfer will happen makes any sense. I think that the problem you're really dealing with is that there are, two problems. Number one, there are clearly certain networks in the West, factions in the United States, factions particularly in Great Britain, typified by former Prime Minister Tony Blair and one of their senior Arabists, so-called, named Dr. Bernard Lewis, actually want a war confrontation with Iran because their policy is regime change. So there's a lot of interference on the Western side with coming up with a unified negotiating stance. Secondly, I think that, unfortunately, there's an enormous amount of distrust back and forth, and that we've reached the point where blame and finger-pointing are so counterproductive that I really just hope that an agreement can be reached under whatever terms to where we actually move ahead with this and take the issue of military confrontation against Iran by Israel or by Israel and the United States completely off the table.
Bernard, sir, it can be said that the U.S. has been trying to overshadow the upcoming NPT meeting with media hype and political statements. If so, does this effectively kill any chances that anything of substance will actually be achieved at this review conference?
Well, I think that the NPT process is going to be a long haul and that it's going to probably take quite a number of years to create a new treaty agreement that supersedes the existing NPT, which has really kind of run out its usefulness. I think that the world at this point urgently needs a massive expansion of nuclear power and that there should be an end to any policy of technological apartheid that attempts to deny any country access to nuclear energy. So I really do think that that we're at an existential moment right now, where many parts of the world are facing economic collapse, eruptions of disease, the kinds of things that can be avoided only if there's a major change in the economy, and nuclear power is key to that. So the UN meeting is really just simply the start of a long process. What I worry about is that there are certain people, including people like Dennis Ross in the Obama administration, like the two British figures that I mentioned earlier, who believe that the real issue should be an aggressive regime change effort against Iran using the pretext of the nuclear issue and the so-called nuclear weapons secret program as an excuse for that. So by offering to trade the low-enriched uranium for the urgently needed fuel rods for the isotope reactor, medical reactor, I hope that basically all excuses are dropped and that the offer is taken under the terms that have been offered.
Sir, looking at the NPT specifically as a whole, isn't it time for a tougher stance on countries that are not signatories in order to force them to sign on? I mean, what possibility actually exists for such a mechanism?
Well, obviously we're talking here about Israel, and Israel is the main non-signator that really is a completely rogue state on the question of nuclear weapons. And so, you know, in the case of Israel, I think it's important to realize that they did not do for example, North Korea did. They made the technological breakthrough, had a test demonstration, and then produced a relatively small number of nuclear weapons. Israel has developed a massive nuclear weapons arsenal. Best estimates are 200 nuclear warheads, all attached to delivery systems that can deploy them against targets anywhere in the region. And this makes no sense whatsoever. At a point where even Russia and the United States have agreed to reductions in nuclear weapons, Israel stands out as a sore thumb. And that's, of course, why Netanyahu would not come to the conference in Washington that President Obama hosted 2 weeks ago. There have been proposals. Iran has made the proposal. I've heard speeches in New York by Prince Turki bin Sultan of Saudi Arabia making the same proposal that the Middle East should be an absolutely nuclear weapons-free area. And, of course, that means dismantling the Israeli program. And probably the United States would basically make a promise of a kind of a nuclear protection umbrella for Israel. But yes, the cases, particularly of Israel, stand out like a sore thumb. And it's one of the biggest single obstacles towards being able to get a viable non-proliferation treaty structure to where people feel confident that all nations will be treated equal rather than having this one ridiculously glaring exception.
All right, Mr. Jeff Steinberg, we'll have to leave it there. Jeff Steinberg with the Executive Intelligence Review joining us there on the line from Washington. Mr. Steinberg, as always, thank you very much for your insight.
Well, you're watching World News here on Press TV. It's time for a quick check of the headlines this hour. Another oil rig overturns in the U.S. state of Louisiana as the Gulf of Mexico oil slick remains out of control. Jordan warns tensions over Israeli settlement expansion could push the region to the brink of an explosion. And Iran says the West has proven to be dishonest in its dealings over Iran's nuclear energy program.